Madam Clerk, you can call the next case.
The next case is A23-1773, Secura Insurance Company versus Deere and Company Respondent, Kibble Equipment LLC Respondent.
Good morning, counsel, and welcome to the Minnesota Court of Appeals. I'm Judge DePaul Harris. With me today is Judge Jonathan Smith and Judge Michael Kirk. What I will have counsel just in the way of a quick informational, you will each be given 15 minutes for argument with a 5-minute rebuttal for the appellant. On the podium, there's a button to the left-hand side to adjust it up and down, so please adjust it prior to your argument. With that, appellant, you can begin your argument when you are ready.
Good morning, Your Honors. My name is Dave Taylor, and I represent Secura Insurance and TLG Farms in this. As the court is aware, this is a case involving a tractor fire, a tractor that was manufactured by John Deere, a model 2018.5, a tractor that was being used by TLG Farms because it was loaned to them by a local John Deere dealer who had had a relationship with the farm. And it was loaned to them because TLG had some machines or a different tractor being worked on by Kibble Equipment. It seems like a fairly straightforward case, and it is. It involves contractual interpretation, claims of breach of warranty, and negligence. But this is a case about giving a farmer a fair shake. This is a case about giving the farmer what they reasonably expect from the professionals that they are dealing with, both from a product manufacturing standpoint, but also from a professional dealership standpoint. We have three bases for our appeal. First is that the district court erred in dismissing the breach of defective design claim under the breach of warranty. The position taken is that the warranty is reasonably interpreted to include defective designs. The second basis for the appeal is that Minnesota Supreme Court precedent, Bellotta v. Kelly, requires product manufacturers to include all feasible safety features in their products as a condition of doing business in the state. And then the third basis for the appeal, which is focused on Kibble Equipment, is that the district court erred in concluding that there was expert opinion testimony required to determine whether or not a retail clerk who is loaning out a product to a customer, whether or not that retail clerk who knows that some products have all of the safety features and some of the products do not, and chooses to loan out the product that does not have all the safety features, is that a reasonable decision? First, in terms of the warranty, as the court is aware, this is a warranty that has been reviewed by the Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals recently. The Eighth Circuit Court of Appeals held that the John Deere warranty was limited and exclusively limited to manufacturing defects. It did so almost exclusively on its analysis of the phrase defects in workmanship and material. We believe that the federal court's analysis of the John Deere warranty was wanting, that it wasn't in accordance with Minnesota law. As this court has stated as recently as last year, in a case that Judge Kirk was on in State v. Teamsters Local 320, in regards to interpreting a contract, the primary goal of contract interpretation is to determine and enforce the intent of the parties. A court first considers the language of the contract. When the language of the contract is unambiguous, it should be given its plain meaning. Contract language is ambiguous if it is reasonably susceptible to more than one meaning. To determine whether a contract is ambiguous, courts should not read words and phrases in isolation, but should consider their meaning in the context of the contract as a whole. We believe that was where the error was made, both here at the district court level, in this state case, but then also in the federal court that this court has been aware of. Where the court failed to interpret the entire contract, there's a number of phrases which we have briefed, but I will put most of the emphasis here on the phrase, or the last phrase within the warranty that says this warranty provides you or gives you specific rights. The court analyzed this contract both in the federal and the state system by looking at that phrase, defects in warranty or defects in manufacturing and workmanship, or materials and workmanship, determined that it meant manufacturing defect by going to Webster. That's a permissible way in which to do contractual interpretation. But they didn't do that same analysis for the other phrases within the warranty. Had the court done so, had the court looked at the phrase, this warranty gives you certain rights or specific rights, had the court looked at Webster for gives, the court would have been informed that gives is defined as bestowing upon somebody. The Constitution in our United States gives us the right of free speech. It's something that is given to us. The interpretation held by the district court at the Rule 12 stage here, in this case, as well as the federal court case, is as a limitation. This is a warranty that limits your rights as a consumer to only those claims involving manufacturing defects. Those are completely contradictory statements within the same document. And as such, they give rise to a reasonable interpretation that the warranty is not such or so limited to manufacturing defects, but is rather reasonably interpreted to include a broader protection for the consumer. Should the court agree that the John Deere warranty is ambiguously or unambiguously limited to manufacturing defects, this case should still have been put forth to the jury on the breach of warranty claim based on the Bellotta v. Kelly case. For the past 40 years in this state, the law has been that it is incumbent upon a product manufacturer to include all feasible safety features. To fail to do so is an impermissible delegation of the product manufacturer's duty to produce a reasonably safe product. In this case, TLG was loaned a 2018 5 RX tractor that was not equipped with side engine shields. Those side engine shields were made optional by the manufacturer, John Deere. They were optional at the time of the loan. They were made optional at the time of manufacture. Notwithstanding the fact that the undisputed facts at Kibble were that they had RX tractors that were both equipped with side engine shields, as well as those not equipped with side engine shields, TLG received a RX tractor that did not have all of its feasible safety features. That tractor, by its design, is in violation of Minnesota law. The court in Bellotta v. Kelly in 1984 stated clearly, without limitation and without reference to it being an implied warranty, that it is a condition of doing business in this state to include all feasible safety features on products that you produce. And a failure to do so is an impermissible delegation of that duty. That's exactly what the 2018 5 RX tractors represent. And this scenario, where TLG, as a farmer, or as a farming organization, it's actually a father-son duo, but for over 40 years had never had a fire on a piece of machinery. They are loaned a piece of machinery that doesn't have all of its feasible safety features. And within 24 hours of using that, it starts on fire. And the experts opine that the fire is most probably caused by debris, farm debris, crop debris, coming into contact with hot exhaust surfaces. That is the exact thing, the exact problem, or the exact situation intended to be remedied by the side engine shields. Those safety features that were determined to be optional for the 2018 fives. And so even if this court does agree that the John Deere warranty is unambiguously limited to manufacturing defects, this case should still have gone to the jury on the breach of warranty claim on the basis of the Bellotta decision.
But isn't that still a design defect claim? Like, it seems circular, because even in the Bellotta decision, they talk about a distinction between design defect and the parts themselves.
Right.
And it's this argument seems a little circular to me, because then we get back to, well, it should have still gone to the jury based on this design defect because of language within Bellotta that says you can't.
Your Honor, I believe that's correct, that it is still a design defect, but it's a specific type of design defect that has been recognized by this state as being impermissible here. It's about the safety features that were being made optional. It's not just a design defect in general that the product is unreasonably dangerous given its foreseeable use based on whatever design decisions. It's a very particular type of design defect that this court, that this state has recognized for 40 years as a protection for consumers. And for exactly this type of situation, TLG did not shop for an RX tractor. They did not intend to buy an RX tractor. They never did, well, at least not at that time. They were given an RX tractor, loaned an RX tractor that didn't have all of its feasible safety features. That's exactly what the Minnesota Supreme Court was addressing in the Bellotta decision. If the consumer, which in this case would have been Kibble, decided not to include those safety features, which is in fact what happened, then TLG is harmed as a result. And that's what the Minnesota Supreme Court says is impermissible within this state. And that's which is an important point, I think, in that this case involves a question of state law, not federal law. So it may be interesting in terms of the interpretation of the federal courts as far as this warranty, but it is non-binding. And as the court recognized in the Eighth Circuit, this is not a case or an issue that has been addressed specifically with Minnesota state law. But it is one that can be addressed. And if addressed, you can give the farmer a fair shake. It is patently unreasonable to believe that a farmer is going to come in, invest $500, $600, $700,000 in a piece of capital equipment without having some reasonable understanding that that is a properly designed machine. That's what we recognized 40 years ago. That's what we're asking this court to recognize today.
The Eighth Circuit was applying Minnesota law sitting in diversity, right?
The Eighth Circuit was applying Minnesota law and sitting in diversity, right, Your Honor? But specifically in the order, recognizes that Minnesota law is absent on the issue.
Okay.
So you're absolutely right that procedurally that's how it's set up, but it was just an absence of enunciation from the Minnesota state courts.
And at that point, you could have moved to certify the question to the Minnesota Supreme Court if there's an absence of Minnesota law.
Well, the initial ruling from the federal court was to trim the claim at the Rule 12, so it wasn't a final judgment. Quite candidly, I'm not certain if we could have moved just on that issue or if it required a disposition of the entire case. On to the third point of the appeal, which is focused on Kibble equipment. The district court determined that Kibble equipment, or that the plaintiff failed to provide expert testimony in regards to the standard of care for a retail clerk who is loaning out a product to a customer. We believe that's simply not the case. As your honors are all aware, the general rule of establishing the standard of care for a negligence case is going to not require expert testimony, only when the standard of care is so esoteric that it would require the jury to understand what that esoteric setting is to avoid speculating. The court, the standard case is the Atwater case, where we've got an insurance representative who was, well, the evaluation was whether or not the insurance agent should have been out looking for coverage for a customer, even though they hadn't requested it. And it became a question of, is that within their professional discretion? That's not the question that was before this court or before the district court. The question before the district court in regards to Kibble was, is it permissible or reasonable for a retailer or a clerk at a retail shop to loan out a product when they know it's not equipped with all its feasible safety features, and they have alternative products with all the feasible safety features that they could have loaned out. The analogy here that we think is apt is if you were to rent a car and the clerk behind the counter knows that they've got one car that's got 3 out of the 5 lug nuts on the front tires and another car that has all 5. And chooses to loan you the one that has the 3, and invariably something happens, a wheel pops off and you're injured. It doesn't take an expert behind that retail counter to know that it's less safe to loan or to rent the car missing the lug nuts. That clerk doesn't need to understand the physics of how that wheel is going to spin off, the chances of it spinning off, or exactly when it's going to happen, but they do reasonably know that one option is more safe than the other. That was what was presented before the court. That is not a standard of care that requires expert testimony. The last issue in regards to the Kibble appeal was the district court's disallowing of direct undisputed evidence that a former mechanic, longtime mechanic of Kibble Equipment, had contacted Ted Gottle of the TLG and expressed surprise that TLG got an RX tractor without the side engine shields, because we had ones with the side engine shields.
Do we need to address this issue if we agree with you on the expert piece?
I believe we do need to address the issue because the court misanalyzed that evidence. Rather than looking at it under the proper rule, which is 801D2, which is a party admission, and this is an agent, the court should have limited its analysis to, is this an employee, and was the statement within their employment? He's a longtime John Deere mechanic at Kibble Equipment. He's talking about John Deere machinery that is being loaned out by Kibble Equipment. That's where the analysis should have ended. The court, rather than doing that, went into, we're not sure where he works exactly, who he talks to, and sort of looked into maybe the substance of that statement rather than the existence of that statement. Again, that statement, the substance of it, is completely undisputed, has never been argued. I see that I'm out of my time. Thank you for your time.
Thank you, Councilman.
Good morning, Your Honor. My name is Amanda Heights. I represent Deere & Company. And with the court's permission, I'd like to split my time with Kibble Manufacturing or Kibble Equipment Company.
Absolutely.
Okay, thank you, Your Honor. There are two things that require affirming the lower court's decision and rejection of Secura's argument on appeal. Number one, the plain language of the warranty. The Eighth Circuit was absolutely correct that there is just one way to read this warranty. And the warranty says that it covers defects in materials and workmanship. And that means a manufacturing defect. There's not been any case cited that holds that those words mean anything else. It's correct that you should look to the entire language of the warranty. But there's no additional language in the warranty that suggests that materials and workmanship mean anything other than a manufacturing defect. There have been a number of arguments raised in the briefing, and I won't go through all of them, about possible ways to maybe read this some other way. But there has not been any ambiguity shown. This warranty covers defects in materials and workmanship. That means a manufacturing defect. We have a disclaimer of all implied warranties of other defects. There have been some arguments that because John Deere did not expressly exclude the design defect within its disclaimer and exclusions from its warranty, that design defects must be included. I'd like to address that for a moment because that was raised in a reply brief. If you take a look at the items that are included within the Deere exclusions, they are all things that could cause equipment to fail prematurely. Racing, failure to maintain, things that would make otherwise warrantable issues outside the warranty. So for example, if you were putting this equipment to really outrageous use, you know, for example, racing, if you were tractor racing, items on the tractor might wear out faster than they would ordinarily with ordinary farm use. Well, if something wore out faster than it ordinarily would with farm use within the warranty period, and Deere determined that that was because of a defect in material and workmanship, it would replace it. You know, we see this with our motor vehicles all the time, that if something goes wrong with your car during the warranty period and you take it to the dealer and they say, yep, that failed, this screw broke. This was a weak screw. We'll go ahead and replace that. The part is covered under warranty. It's the same thing with tractors. And then it also doesn't include things that are intended to be exhausted. For example, your tractor isn't defective because it needs new oil, just like your car isn't defective just because you need to fill it with gas or you need an oil change in it. These are consumable products. So the Deere warranty is entirely consistent internally. And then second, to address the issue of kind of the circular argument of whether a warranty claim would survive if the court were to agree that the plain language of the warranty covers defects in materials and workmanship. From a 30,000 foot level, we need to look at this in the context of Minnesota law. There's the economic loss statute that was passed in 2000, and recognizing a breach of warranty claim based on a design defect on a warranty that does not cover design defects would butt up against the express purpose of the legislature trying to separate contractual claims from tort claims. Second, how do we have a breach of warranty when Deere's warranty does not cover design defects? That's the other glaring problem with this circular argument. I see that I am a little past halfway, so please excuse my running over, unless the court has more questions for me.
I do have one question. Do you agree with counsel and with the Eighth Circuit that there's not a Minnesota decision on this exact issue about workmanship and material?
There's not something directly on point, nor does there need to be. And that's because it's a plain language. It's not so much a global issue of law. It isn't how does Minnesota treat the economic loss doctrine before the statute. This is just how do we read words that are very common in warranty contracts. And there is not a Minnesota case on point that I'm aware of.
And as such, do you think this opinion should be precedential?
I believe so.
Okay, thank you.
Good morning, Your Honors. Alexander Baja on behalf of Respondent Kibble Equipment, LLC. As per the briefing, Kibble did not take issue with the arguments related to Deere, but we did oppose the appeal regarding the district court's decision, or rather seeking to affirm the district court's decision that expert testimony was required. So this is not as simple a case as Respondent makes it out, where this was a retail establishment that was providing a product that didn't have all of its safety features. Under the facts of this case, notably, the side shields that were identified were not a safety feature. It's important to recognize that the side shields were issued or identified as an optional function. There are multiple categories that Deere issues to determine whether or not a modification to an existing tractor qualifies for safety or not safety. There's mandatory safety, fixes fail, and then the lowest tier, which has nothing to do with safety, is a PEP, P-E-P, which is a product enhancement program. That's what we're talking about relating to the side shields at issue in this case.
So side shields wouldn't have prevented a fire?
Your Honor, we did not, the claim against Kibble was not a fire would caused by that. I don't think there is sufficient expert testimony, at least related to the side shields, that they would have prevented a fire. There's no expert testimony, at least from Kibble on that regard. But the extent of the side shields are, as Deere identified, they are to help prevent debris that can accumulate near an exhaust.
But isn't that usually the reason you have a fire in a tractor?
Well, there's always a concern that debris can cause a fire, but as the district court recognized,
the modern tractors have so much horse and so much heat, seems like it would be a pretty significant cause.
Well, Your Honor, I think your question raises a good point in that if this was an issue, what is required of Kibble? And that's ultimately what we're talking about when there was no expert testimony here. Respondent has taken the position that because these side shields could have prevented debris, that Kibble was required to install them, even though D Deere didn't identify them as mandatory. Now, they've taken that position, but they haven't offered any expert testimony that would actually show that an implement dealer that rents out equipment has an independent obligation or some requirement to actually examine what equipment is being what equipment is optional at the time and whether or not it has an independent obligation to actually install them, because it could potentially affect safety.
But they had three of these tractors, right? Am I misremembering that?
I believe there were three tractors.
Of this particular model?
Yes.
And two of them had shields. And the other one had holes.
Your Honor, I believe that is correct. But as the district court correctly recognized, there are reasons why you may or may not want side shields on a tractor. And they relate to performance. There is some safety element to the extent that it can increase the heat in the cab. This was all testified to by Deere's expert, Troy Schick. And this is what the district court ultimately said. It said, look, there are pros and cons to having these. And because this is not as simple as you need them or you don't, you need an expert to actually say or actually opine on what was Kibble's expectation, what was its duty under the circumstances when it was faced with an optional side shield. Was it required to perform some independent assessment? There's no testimony, there's no expert opinion on that issue. And that's ultimately why the district court said, all right, there's not sufficient evidence here to proceed and summary judgment is appropriate.
Why do we need an expert to tell us that?
To tell that independent assessment is required? Well, Your Honor, if here a jury, the fact finder, would be asked to opine or to decide what the duty was. And so is it a situation where Kibble is required to install any safety feature that is potentially that could potentially affect fire? I don't think that's the standard, but more importantly, there's no expert that would say that is required or that is not required. End of the day, you know, the burden is on respondent to establish causation and duty and breach. There's no expert that has opined on here's what Kibble's required to do as an implement dealer. And because they didn't install these side shields or whatever else duty they would have been alleged, they violated that duty.
Does their claim go beyond that, though, about should you have installed the side shields on this particular tractor, or should you have given one of the other two tractors that were sitting on the lot that had the shields? It seems like there's two sort of theories there. One, install it. Two, you had two other things with the safety stuff already installed.
So that argument that these alternative tractors supposedly should have been provided, I think it still goes to the same issue ultimately, which is what are the obligations of Kibble? Again, the district court recognized there are competing factors that ultimately have to be assessed as to why you might install a side shield and why you might not. Now, to determine what the appropriate tractor is and what the duties are of Kibble in providing a tractor, you need expert testimony. This is not something where an individual knows, well, they are harvesting corn versus harvesting some other product, therefore they need the side shields or they do not need these side shields. That's why expert testimony is required. This is not something that a layperson knows. The Sila case, which was cited by respondent in their briefing, was a situation where there was a retail basketball display erected. And the court said, well, yeah, you don't need special knowledge for that. But the Atwater case, which was discussed here today, went with, well, what is your understanding? What is your knowledge? You're using your professional judgment. That does require expert testimony. That's really what we're talking about here, is if ultimately they should have provided one tractor over another, what should they have done? What was the assessment? What was that process? That is beyond a layperson's understanding and requires expert testimony. To briefly touch on the hearsay issue that was raised, we have briefed it, but I will just say that even if the court were to decide that this was not hearsay and it should have been admitted, it doesn't actually change the conclusion here, which is expert testimony is required. If the court or if Mr. Witt's testimony was that there were these alternative tractors that could have been provided but were not, again, the question is, well, what was Kibble's understanding what was their duty under the circumstances to provide. I see I'm out of time. So I'm happy to answer any questions, Your Honors.
Thank you, Counsel.
Thank you.
Your Honors, just to address some of the points in reverse order, in regards to the Kibble argument, unlike what was just argued here, there certainly are instances where a technician at a John Deere dealership might have to engage in showing or engaging some professional analysis of what to do for a particular customer, how to fix a particular machine. If I come in and I say, should I add this to my tractor or should I not, they might talk to me about what I use my tractor for and so on and so forth and give me some advice on that regard. That might require some professional judgment. But that's not what was presented here. As Your Honor has recognized, the simple decision before this technician was loan out a machine that does not have side engine shields versus loan out a machine that does have side engine shields. Kibble, it's undisputed that Kibble understood that the side engine shields were designed for one particular purpose, which is to prevent debris from coming into contact with hot exhaust surfaces. The National Fire Protection Association recognizes that very scenario as being the prime cause for farm machinery fires. This is not something that they were unaware of. If there's any question, it would be a question of fact as to whether or not the jury believed that is a safety feature. We believe that it should have been submitted to the jury on that issue. But in terms of the argument that Kibble could have been engaging in some professional conduct, there are cases cited in both sides that the EMT cases, the paramedic cases, and in those cases, the courts have recognized that a paramedic may at one point be engaging in professional judgment and using those types of skills, and in another instance, been doing something that's very reasonable that any juror could understand. And that's exactly what this is. I'm not here to say that Kibble doesn't exercise some professional judgment and those technicians aren't smart people doing that type of thing. But in this instance, in the issue of loan out a machine that doesn't have all of its feasible safety features versus one that is available to be loaned out, that is a reasonable decision that any juror in this state can evaluate and determine whether or not it's negligent. In regards to Deere's counsel's argument.
Counsel, would it have made any difference if the other two had already been rented out so that the only one they had?
Well, I think if that scenario were to have unfolded, I think the Kibble has an obligation, as the case law states, they would have had an obligation, I believe, to tell Ted or Lance or TLG that this is a machine that doesn't have all of its reasonable safety or feasible safety features. As both sides have cited, a retailer can be held negligent for failing to identify a defect that they had reason to know existed. And in this case, the only issue is whether or not a jury would believe that Kibble Equipment, who understood that this machine doesn't have the side engine shields, that the side engine shields are designed with one purpose in mind, to prevent fires, is it reasonable for them to loan that out? Should they have known that there was a problem there? And to complicate matters, because we don't have that hypothetical, we actually do have tractors that were properly equipped that could have been loaned out, which makes it, I think, even more glaring the negligence that was engaged in there.
Does it make a difference that this was late season harvesting of, I assume, corn?
No.
My experience, it's a lot more flammable than other crops.
Judge, I think you're absolutely right. We get late into the season, we've got harvesting the corn. That was ongoing, but this was actually the field work that was being done by the tractor to turn the field after the combine had come through. So you're right, the material is, but that just highlights the point, right? That highlights the importance of these side engine shields and why they are safety features, because there is this ever-present risk of fire. And it's a warning that is in every John Deere manual. It's in every manual for 2018 fires or 2019s or any John Deere manual that you will pick up that will say you have to keep your machine clean and free of debris, otherwise you increase the risk of fires. That's what was supposed to have happened here, and it didn't. In regards to John Deere's counsel's comments, the analogy or the example of having a weak screw being a warrantable item, the question becomes, according to John Deere's interpretation, is that screw weak by design, by choice, or somehow by manufacture. And according to John Deere and his interpretation of the warranty, not only are they only responsible if that screw is defective by manufacturer, but it's the burden of the consumer to be able to prove that somehow there was a defect in that manufacture of that screw. That is not how these warranties are generally understood. And I believe that's the basis of her example. Weak screws are commonly referred or commonly covered under warranty claims without a distinction as to whether or not they're weak because of design or manufacture. And it illustrates the point that the reasonable interpretation of this type of contract is that we're buying the manufactured machine, design as all and all.
Counsel, your time is up.
I have a question, if I may.
You may.
Same question that I asked to respondents' counsel. Given the fact that the Eighth Circuit has said, and you represented as well, that the warranty in materials has not been defined in Minnesota, do you think this should be a precedential opinion?
I do, Your Honor, and I do think that the closest analogy is that it wasn't a state court case, but it's the Bruce Martin case. It was a district court case in Minnesota. And they took that was in the district court, but they were looking at Indiana law. And at a minimum, well, at least that's the closest case that has touched on this. And at a minimum, I think that the court needs to engage in the intent of the parties analysis, which the court did in Bruce Martin. And they determined that these particular parties knew something about product liability law. So therefore, this phrase and the interpretation of it being limited to manufacturing defects is reasonable under those circumstances. The problem that we have here with this case is that at the Rule 12 stage, the court made that determination without any of that information, without any analysis as to who the parties are, what they may have intended that phrase to mean.
Okay, thank you.
Thank you.
Thank you both, counsel, for your argument. This matter is submitted and we will issue an opinion within the statutory time frame. With that, that does conclude our oral arguments today. The court does have two additional non-oral arguments. With that, the court stands in recess. Thank you.
All right.